Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Welcome to the Runner's World Podcast with me, Rick Pearson.
And me, Jane Maguire.
Today we're talking about how to train like a Norwegian. Jane, have you been training like a Norwegian or are you still following the joy plan or maybe both?
Maybe both. No, definitely not the Norwegian plan. I'm still doing the joy plan a bit, still doing the joy plan, still working out, you know, where that's going to take me. And but yeah, still enjoying it, still kind of trying to do a tempo session and a long run every week, and then what happens in between is whatever I feel like. So the joy plan's got a little bit more structure, but definitely not Norwegian yet. What about you? Are you 100 mile weeks yet? Not yet.
No. I like the idea of I think in the joy plan, it would be the tempo would be the one that survives out of the hard sessions, wouldn't it? I don't think hills aren't getting into most joy plans. I think interval sessions can be a bit of a hard sell, but I feel like a tempo run, always feel like I'm more likely to do that if I'm kind of.
Hills have never ever been in my plan. We've spoken about this before, haven't we? I will go out of my way to avoid hills, but tempo can stay. I do quite like a track session, but I think you have to be in the mood, don't you? That's really dependent on the weather. I think sunny day.
Yeah, I think you need some people, don't you? I've got huge admiration for people who can go to track on their own and like put in a really honest effort. But I'm definitely not one of them. I need like some people to run with and some structure for it to happen. I was watching a bit of Wimbledon tennis because obviously that's on at the minute, and the one surviving Brit is this guy Cameron Norrie, who he's actually a really good runner as well, and they made a big thing of it. They were like, oh, you know, he went away and got himself really fit, which seems to be the only way to compete as a tennis player now, if you think of like how fit Andy Murray was and stuff. But yeah, he said he went back to New Zealand, which is where he spent sort of a lot of his childhood during lockdown. And he posted a 36:45 10K and a 17:25K. And he says, I don't know if I'm better at 5 or 10, but I've got some good genes. My mum is a good runner. So yeah, pretty decent. As a sort of non-runner, pretty decent.
Yeah,
because he's obviously quite a big bloke as well as a tennis player. He's like well over 6 foot. So it's quite like, all right, fair play.
Well,
there you go.
I hope he does well this week. I'll be watching now.
Yeah, I think, well, if it doesn't work out, I could go and try and win the local park run. I reckon it is an interesting subject this week, isn't it? Because we've got the Norwegian training method, which seems a bit arbitrary for some people, but obviously it is quite in vogue, and it's a quite specific way of training that's a bit different. And we've got James Paul with us to talk to us about it. So James, thanks for coming on the podcast. How are you doing?
I'm very well, thanks. Thanks for having me on board.
No, great to have you on board. Maybe we should just jump into the Norwegian training method. So for the uninitiated, James, what do we mean when we say the Norwegian training method? It isn't just about eating large amounts of herring, is it?
No, wouldn't it be good though if it was? That was that easy. Yeah. That would be the silver bullet. Would be just eat pickled fish. I think it refers. I mean, obviously, it's come to the fore in recent years through athletes like the Inga Britsons who follow this sort of approach, but. And it can be quite complicated. So perhaps the most simplistic way is to look at sort of two ways. The standard way of training, which is carried out by most athletes, which is this sort of polarized training. So we're going to use, you know, suggest three training zones. And so in the first is training zone one, aerobic training, very easy. The sort of training you might do with your friends, breathe easily. You can think about things. You know, it's low level training. And then I'm going to skip to three, which is high intensity training. So it's the kind of training that is potentially quite unpleasant, but you do it in short amounts. So typically in a polarized training, you spend most 80% of your time in zone one, easy, and 20% of your time in zone three, and almost no time in zone two. And that's used by a lot of athletes to great success over many, many years.
Yeah.
What we're talking about with the Norwegian method is more of a pyramidal, pyramid style training. So you're going to spend, let's say, 70% of your time in zone one, and maybe 15% in, or 70% in zone in, in, we're just trying to get the maths correct, and 20% in two, and 10% in three. So and that zone two is quite important, because that's the difference between the two. And in zone two, it's what they would call lactate threshold training. Thresholds training is in zone two. And so that's kind of that's what's been used successfully by a lot of the Norwegians. It's not, the population of Norway and the Nordics is not very big, so a lot of these people are using it to a lot of success. So it suddenly comes to the fore of saying, is this the new way we should be training? Is that good? Is that clear sort of?
I think so. I'm a visual learner, so I've drawn a triangle with 3-2-1 in. So you're saying
a bit of a lopsided pyramid, to be fair.
The lopsided pyramid. So two is the most important. What's the most important? Where's the science here? What's the most important part? Or are they all together?
The difference between the two is that you're spending, in the Norwegian method, you spend some time in zone two.
Right.
In the polarized method,
80-20.
You spend no time in zone two. We always talk about, you've got to be fresh enough to go really hard. It's really hard or really easy versus sometime really easy, sometime really hard, sometime in the middle.
Would you say that zone two is kind of race pace then? Is that the science? Is that why we should be in zone two more?
It depends, obviously, on the distance. So and this is where it starts to get complicated. The Norwegian method, when you do it properly and by science scientifically, is you work out where your lactate thresholds are. Mm. So this is why I don't want to jump to the end of the podcast, but this is why it probably doesn't work for a lot of people. It requires quite a lot of precision.
Yeah.
So you have to again, we'll do a little bit of sports science, and I'm not a sports scientist, so I'm trying to make this, you know, this is my understanding, and I'm happy to be proven wrong. But there's two parts with the lactate, with your threshold. Is LT1, lactate threshold 1, and lactate threshold 2. So what happens is, when you do a lactate threshold test, you will do a series of intervals, usually at the track, and you will take a sample of blood, and that sample will measure the amount of lactate in your system. So up until lactate one, when you're in this aerobic zone one phase, your body is producing lactate, which is a good thing, and it's processing it, and you're using it to energize yourself, to move forwards. At LT1, the effort is getting harder. So what happens in the intervals is they get faster. So when you get several intervals in, depends how fit you are, suddenly you'll get to LT1. And at LT1, lactate threshold one, the amount of lactate your body is building is increasing at a faster rate than your body is able to process it. So that's arguably in what we might call a tempo run. And it's typically about a 40-minute effort, perhaps. The sort of effort you would do for 40 minutes where you'd get to a point where you were done. So it's hard, but it's not super hard.
Yeah.
And this is what gets complicated about these. And how you measure it is also hard. So you can do it with heart rate. If you do it with a lactate threshold machine, measurement, then you can be very precise. You can do it with heart rate, you can do it with perceived effort. Both of those methods are suboptimal because heart rate lags. Perceived effort is about perception, so it has some variation from individual to individual. And when you perceive effort for a workout session, you can think about the whole effort rather than the individual bits, perhaps. So at LT2, your lactate level has got so big now that you cannot continue at the pace you were doing. So your intervals have increased. At LT2, you're it's the point when your legs are screaming and you can't. And for cycling, it's a little bit easier to do because you're turning the pedals. It gets to the point when you can no longer turn the pedals because the acidosis has built up in you. And we've all been there where your legs literally can't move. That's LT2. So what they do in this method is they work in that particular LT1 and LT2 space, because the idea is you train the body to be able to process lactic acids more efficiently.
As you say, James, it is quite technical, isn't it? And I guess my hope with the Norwegian method is that we could do some kind of in simplest terms or broadly speaking, and I guess maybe that wouldn't be as accurate or as effective, but as you were sort of saying, we're talking about a bigger emphasis here, aren't we, on kind of tempo stroke threshold sessions, which is probably a kind of, roughly speaking, a 7 to 8 out of 10 effort. That's what this method's putting quite a lot of focus on, running in that zone, isn't it? Yeah,
it's not VO2 max all out sprinting type stuff. It's definitely in that sustainably hard, comfortably uncomfortable sort of place. The sort of runs you do where you can, you sort of don't know whether you like or dislike that amount of effort. It's hard. Just about do it. You'll know it when you're there, because it's like, oh, I don't think I can do this anymore, but you can do it a bit more, and then you can do a bit more, and you sort of, and when you do it, you feel quite happy that, you know, it's quite a satisfying feeling. It's in that space. The problem is that the Norwegian method really focuses at the bottom end of lactate threshold one. And that's quite, and to understand where that is, it's quite precise. And they do these lactate threshold tests. You can buy a machine, it's about £250. You have to buy, it's invasive, because you have to either prick the earlobe or the finger to get the small amount of blood. So it's probably out of the question for 99.9% of anyone who's listening to this, or anyone who, you know, like, even if you like running a lot, it's kind of a fairly unpleasant thing to do. And that, so my concern about good and an average, you know, any runner who's doing it, this approach, is that, are you in the right place? And you know, what does the bottom end of tempo look like, and what does it feel like, and what pace is that? And I think if you really committed to doing this and you really wanted to, then you could probably find that. It would be, you know, it would be somewhere close to, you know, a 45-minute run rather than a 40-minute run effort. But it's knowing how precise that is. And my worry would be, without knowing the precision, you fall into this trap of working in this sort of unproductive junk, perhaps junk mode, where it's faster than, it's more effort than you normally would do in zone one, but it's not zone three.
Yes.
And then you're too tired to do zone three because you haven't got an energy. And perhaps you're then too tired to do the really easy zone one because you just need a day off for resting. So I'm not against it, but I think it's hard to be that precision with it. And I don't think, from the research that I read, there's a lot to suggest accurate ways of doing it without a lactate threshold monitoring tool.
Yeah, as someone with a severe phobia of needles, I'm instantly out.
I'm out.
But is it an approach you would, from the sounds of things, no, but you wouldn't, this isn't an approach for the masses. You're talking about a very select few, like athletes, that would even do this.
Yeah.
Well, I think the masses want, and without wishing to go off on a complete tangent, you know, everyone's looking for a silver bullet. Everyone's looking for do less, a secret. And
£300 pair of shoes, right?
Yeah.
But people are looking for, like, to train less and do well. And I get that, because everyone's time poor and everybody would like to be better than they are, but not really do the hard work. When you look deeply into both the polarized and the pyramidal approaches, what the underlying factor is that the athletes that do well on either approach are doing a lot of miles.
Yeah.
And you know, as you had me on here before, and you know my belief is that, you know, to master something, you need to spend a lot of time doing it. Yeah. And I think to be a good runner, irrespective of distance, it is relative. So if you're doing a 5K, you don't have to do as many miles as a marathon, of course. But you, generally speaking, these athletes who follow either approach are served well by having big volume, either many years of running, or they're doing quite large amounts of mileage each week. Even if you look at someone like Ingebrigtsen's, they're doing 100, you know, 5 and 10,000 meter runners, they're running over 100 miles a week.
It's close to marathon training, isn't it, really, all that kind of mileage.
And you know, they're quite a good example, because you know, if we're talking about, what did I say the number, 70 20 10, they're only, if you're doing 100 miles a week, you're only doing 10 miles in in that top end, and you're only doing 20 miles in zone two. So it's as a percentage, it's still, and even as an absolute number, it's still not that much work.
Yeah.
I think when you come down to it, if you're only doing 20 miles a week, the reality is then you start, when you do the percentages, you're doing doing 4 miles in a tempo, and you're doing, so it's just difficult to scale it back unless you're doing the bigger mileage.
This is the Runner's World podcast.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
When the Norwegian Method comes up, I guess the sort of the showcase session a week is this kind of double workout that's difficult. And it seems, to my sort of limited understanding, it's two hardish workouts in one day. Can you tell us a little bit more about that and the thinking behind that? Because it does seem quite excessive, that as an approach.
I agree. And it's one of these things where it's quite, I wonder how easy it is to regularly do those two sessions. So yes, you're absolutely right. Just to make that clear, part of the process is in that zone two space we've talked about, somewhere between LT1 and LT2, are these workouts. And what we'll do, two a day workouts in running are not uncommon. What you typically do is a hard one and an easy one in the same day.
Yeah.
Or you do two easy ones because you want to do more volume. What they suggest is two hard ones, but the hard sessions are quite, the harder sessions, zone two sessions, are quite short.
Mm.
The idea is you're training in between at the bottom end of LT1, in the back of that threshold zone, at the bottom of it, twice, so that your body is better at processing the lactic acid. It still comes down to better processing the lactic acid on a system that is more fatigued. I just feel like the number of people, you know, the number of athletes doing it is quite small, and they've got huge years of training and volume behind them. It sort of sways it towards, and the research does suggest this, that some of these people, you might be the Norwegians who we're talking about, would do well on a polarized approach because they have this incredible engine, aerobic engine, in there in the first place.
Do you think there are lessons though? Do you think, because obviously we're talking about the elite, the niche, the people doing 100 miles a week, which is mind blowing to me. What are the lessons someone like me doing my joy plan and taking it really easy? What can I learn from the Norwegians? And I guess the listener who's listening to this doing a park run, who's not that like elite, what's the kind of things we can take?
So what you could take away from it, I think this is where it starts to get a bit muddy. Because you could easily find yours. I think the polarized approach is better because you know what really easy is,
yeah,
and you know what really hard is.
Yeah.
What we're asking is a perceived effort of, as Rick said, maybe six and a half, or between six and a half. Let's say LT1 is perceived effort of six, and LT2, which is that where it suddenly becomes too high, is eight. You want to be some, you might be at the bottom end more towards six, but as we all know with deep effort, if you had a good, you know, good night's sleep and a good day at work, and then sometimes runs feel harder or easier than other days. And so you're sort of potentially in this gray area, which, you know, maybe wrongly I'm calling it junk miles, but in this sort of zone where you're not really sure. And I think it's much easier to be, I'm running really easy, or I'm running really hard. Those two, and again, those are perceived efforts, but you know what really hard is like.
Yeah.
You know what really easy is, why am I bothering doing this? It feels too easy. And really hard is, oh my God, when's this ever going to end? You know, those two things, it's that gray area. And because the Norwegian approach is very precise, it's hard to be precise without the precise tools to make it that way.
Yeah.
One quick thing is that if you think 100 miles for the Ingebrigtsens is scary, I'll send you the link, and if you want to include it in the notes, there is the papers that cover all this. There's just recently come out, and you can put them in. They're authored by lots of people, but they're very good. But there is in one of them the training program for Kipchoge in his build up and obviously arguably the greatest long distance runner in history. But he's running in the build-up phase 200 kilometers a week. So, and he's following a polarized approach. And he might do as little as 5K of his training week in that super hard space. And he's doing 80%, you know, all of his training almost exclusively in this easy running. And if you look at it, some of it's 5 minute kilometers. I know I'm switching between kilometers and miles an hour. 8 miles an hour. That's 8 minute miles versus, you know, very, very fast. But a lot of it is training runs that you and I could run along with Kipchoge and be happy.
Okay. Yeah. So you're telling me to forget the joy plan and download Kipchoge's plan. I've heard it.
Yeah.
I've heard it.
If you could do a 200 kilometer a week, I would be, you know, kind of crazy, right?
He does that. I'll email you in a week and be like, James, I'm never running again.
I'm never listening to again. But you have to sort of understand the body and how it works. The energy system, there's multiple energy systems. I'm not going to get deep into that as well. But some of those changes that happen to the body only happen when you run slowly.
Yeah.
And this is why often people forget that they think running slowly is a waste of time. And it's well proven that by running slowly, your body adapts to, you know, your aerobic system adapts. So all of these runners who are capable, whether you're doing the Norwegian method or you're doing a polarized approach, they spend a lot of time adapting their body so that they can earn the right to work really hard. And I'm intentionally using those words because you have to earn it, because they do strength and conditioning, and they do this a lot of this work in this very slow space so that their bodies are strong enough and their systems can cope with running at that very, very hard level. For most of us, we don't do enough running to earn the very, very hard. So but we could spend more time working on that bit, I think. And it's not that we shouldn't, you know, we can do the, it might be going from one hard session a week to two. That's what we would earn by doing slower runs. And you only have to look at, there's so many of the elite athletes, and both those papers don't just have Kipchoge, they have the top 50. They're very good papers. They're very techie. They're very sciencey, but you only need to look at the list of the people who they've been working with to get the data. And it starts to really stand up to scrutiny that these people are putting, whether you do either approach, there's a lot of time spent in the very easy zone one.
Yeah. James, what are you training like a Norwegian at the moment? What are you doing? You're recording from a car, so you're doing something cool.
I'm very happy to be at the Trash Free Trails State of Our Trails Summit today, which is being held in actually quite nice weather in North Wales. They're an amazing organization. People should check them out. It's a charity that's aiming to find solutions to the litter, the single use pollution we find in the countryside on our trails for runners, riders and roamers. And I know you've had them on the podcast before. You've had Rich. It's close to my heart. I've spent a lot of my time outside in the countryside, you know, in London, in the parks and things, and nothing frustrates me more than to see the litter and the mess that gets left by people. And it's a big challenge. And, you know, part of it is to take that litter away and do the litter picking. But there's more people throwing it away than there are picking it up. So there's a whole piece of work we're doing today on changing education, changing people's perceptions, trying to stop them dropping it in the first place. But also at a brand level, how do you work with brands to be part of the solution? And then all the manufacturers of the various drinks and energy bars and things that we use, how can we work with them to mean that we haven't got as much pollution on our trails, microplastics, et cetera, that, make the place one, look awful, and two, have much more, much bigger consequences to our own lives, but also to the wildlife. So that's what I'm up to doing today. And it's good. If people could check it out, get involved. There's do it yourself toolkits on there. So you can go out and it's really easy to make a difference. Record the things that you're seeing, pick them up if you can, take one bag out. Even the smallest bag being taken off the trails is better than none, right? It doesn't need to be complicated.
Yeah. James, thanks so much for coming on the podcast, talking about the Norwegian method. Always great to talk to you. I always feel like we get the truth from you. You don't sort of dress it up as the Norwegian method's amazing when potentially it is something very hard to follow.
I'm glad you say that, Rick. Rick, I always think that maybe I come on and I just poo-poo everyone's good ideas. And that isn't me at all. Because my sort of parting words would be, if you look back at all the runners who have been doing things over the years, if there was been a shortcut, if there'd been a Egyptian method, then everyone would be doing it, right? I mean, there are a few people doing some quirky things, but I think maybe that's unique to them and a small number of athletes. But the tried and trusted does work, and I think is easier to follow than some of the I wouldn't necessarily call them silver bullets or magic potions, but they it's tough to do some of that stuff if you're just a regular everyday runner.
So that brings us to the end of this week's Runner's World podcast. Big thanks to our guest, James Poole, and to you, of course, for listening.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.